racial, cultural, emotional, religious, physical, psychological, and situational diversities, to be sensitive to circumstances different from our own. Help us in our use of power to not only seek out the like-minded, but also those whose views differ from our own. Sensitize us to diversity and focus our use of power to accomplish the greatest good. In these closing days of this legislative session, may decision-making take into consideration all God's people. Uphold and bless each representative here today as they use their power for the common good of our state. In your all-powerful name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor Rowan. Representative Martin, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Green.
Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer is spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representative Kelly has been previously excused from a call of the House today, and that Representative Kukish, who had been previously excused, is present.
Record will so reflect. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Might I also ask members to keep the representative from Fairbanks in their thoughts and in their thoughts and prayers today, as he is burying his mother, and it's a very tough time for he and his family.
Thank you, Representative Mulder. And if the members please would just stand for a moment of silence in honor of Representative Kelly's mother. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 114th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal is certified by the Chief Clerk. It's approved by the Chief. No, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the journal stands approved. This brings us down to introduction of guests. Representative Hudson.
Madam Speaker, it gives me great pleasure today to introduce the fourth grade class from Mock Bay Elementary School. They're in both galleries, but for the most part over in the Taylor Gallery. And I'd like to call their name. I'll introduce, first of all, their teacher, Dan Hall. And if each one of these people would stand as I call their name. Dan Hall is the teacher of this 27-member class, Madam Speaker. Robert, and if you'd all stand as I just call your name. Brian, Melissa, Laura, Dexter. Dexter, Madam Speaker, is my grandson. Yay. And I'm very proud to have him here today. Matt. James, Ian, Brittany, Mikhail, Johanna, Teresa, Kayla, Amanda, Nick, Elizabeth, Buckley, Max, Bryce, Craig, Jake, Greg, Ryan, Blake, Jason, and over in the Paradovich Gallery is Elise and Heather, and Heidi Watto, who is the parent helper. Madam Speaker, these people are here to learn something about us. I had the occasion of visiting their school here just a week or so ago and talked to them about what we do up here. They're very anxious to see some of our works. Would you all please help me welcome these fine young men and women here today?
Further guests for introduction. Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It gives me a lot of pleasure to introduce one of our guest pages here today. Sitting over here on my left is Emma Haynes. She is the granddaughter of an old friend of mine who lives here in Juneau, works with the Department of Labor, Gail Haynes, and she's been staying with her grandmother and going to school here in Juneau, and we're really happy to be able to have her see a little bit about how government works and as a guest page. Help me welcome her here this morning.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
I have no messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body.
We received a message dated May 6th stating the Senate accepts the House invitation to meet in joint session on Friday, May 9th at 11:15 a.m. to consider the confirmation of the governor's appointments to various boards and commissions. Message dated May 6th stating the Senate has passed and returned CS for House Bill 23 Resources, House Bill 26, and CS for House Bill 66 Hess. Message dated May 6th stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Senate Joint Resolution Number 14 thus adopting Senate Joint Resolution Number 14, amended House. And a message dated May the 6th stating the Senate has passed CS for House Bill 46 Resources with the following amendment, Senate CS for CS for House Bill 46 Finance amended Senate, and it's returned for consideration. Messages dated May 6th stating the Senate has passed the following and they're transmitted for consideration. Sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 30 by the Senate Judiciary Committee by request relating to the defense of Alaska from offensive nuclear attack.
That will be referred to the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs.
CS for Senate Bill 11 Finance, title amended by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Establishing a Reimbursement Program for Municipal Bonds, Notes, or Other Indebtedness Incurred for State for School Construction Relating to Administrative Costs of Reimbursing Municipal School Construction Debt Relating to Municipal School Construction Project Eligibility Requirements for Receiving State Reimbursement and Providing for an Effective Date.
That will be referred to the HES Committee and the Finance Committee.
Senate Bill 117 by Senators Donnelly, Wilkin, Taylor, and Pierce, entitled An Act Relating to an Infant Care Curriculum in the Public School System.
That will be referred to the HES Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Communications? House stand at ease? Representative Mulder?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Might we revert up the calendar to
without objection?
Guests? In the Paradovich Gallery, we have a very old and dear friend of mine. And to actually many of us here, she was a former business manager, I believe, for the laundry workers, and is now on the board of the Correctional Industries, and is also vice president of the state AFL-CIO. Please join me in welcoming Annabelle Stevens.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar, Madam Clerk.
I have no communications, Madam Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 16, Juvenile Delinquency Procedures, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 16, Judiciary, with the new title recommending do pass Porter, Green, James, Croft. No recommendation, Berkowitz and Rokeberg. The report was signed by Green Chair. House Bill 16 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 116, Workers' Compensation Self-Insurance Group, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 116, Finance, with the same title, recommending do pass Coring, Davis, and Kelly. No recommendation, Terrio, Davies, and Moses. Amend Mulder and Martin. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. House Bill 116 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 189, Restrict Tobacco Sales Possession, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 189, Judiciary, with the new title, recommending do pass Porter, Rokeberg, and Green. No recommendation, Croft, Bundy, Berkowitz, and James. The report was signed by Green Chair. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 189 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 238, Mining Exploration Incentive Credits, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 238 Resources with the same title, recommends an additional referral to the Finance Committee, attaches a fiscal note recommending do pass Hudson, no recommendation, Williams, Masick, Ogun, and Jewell. Amend Nicolai. The report was signed by Ogun and Hudson co-chairs. House Bill 238 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 245, Domestic Violence Assaults, Prisoner Contacts, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 245, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Croft, Porter, Green, James, Bundy, and Berkowitz. No recommendation, Rokeberg. The report was signed by Green Chair. House Bill 245 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10, supporting use of fur bearer resource, recommending do pass Williams, Ogun, Nicolai, Jewell, and Hudson. No recommendation, Masick. The report was signed by Ogun and Hudson. Co-chair, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 3 Judiciary Minors Curfew Violations, attaches a fiscal note recommending due pass James Bundy and Roquebrug. No recommendation Porter, Green, Berkowitz, and Croft. The report was signed by Green Chair. CSSB 3 Judiciary has a further referral to the Finance Committee. Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 7 Rules Amended Hunting, Sport, Fish, Trapping Fees Licenses. Recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 7 Finance with the same title. Attaches a fiscal note recommending due pass Mulder, Martin, Coring. No recommendation Terrio, Davies, Foster, and Kelly. The report was signed by Terrio co-chair. CSSB 7 Rules Amended has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 9 Capital Project Matching Grant for Indian Reservation, recommending due pass Terrio, Coring, Davies, Grusendorf, Moses, Davis, and Foster. No recommendation Mulder and Martin. The report was signed by Terrio co-chair. Senate Bill 9 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 70 Judiciary Discharge of a Firearm at Buildings, recommending it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 70 Finance with the same title. Attaches a fiscal note recommending due pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davis. No recommendation Davies, Kelly, and Foster. The report was signed by Mulder Vice Chair. CSSB 70 Jude has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 104 Finance Amended Omnibus Insurance Reform. Recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 104 Finance with the same title. Attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note recommending due pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davis. No recommendation Davies, Kelly, and Foster. The report was signed by Mulder Vice Chair. CSSB 104 Fin Am has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 119 Labor and Commerce for Fraternal Benefit Societies, recommending due pass Porter, Roquebrug, Croft, Green. No recommendation Bundy and Berkowitz. The report was signed by Green Chair. CSSB 119 LNC has no further referral. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered Senate Bill 149 Healthcare Facility Audits and Reports, recommending due pass Dyson, Green, Bundy, Porter, and Kimplin. No recommendation Veazey and Bryce. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. Senate Bill 149 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 164 Hess Amended, Authority of Emergency Medical Technicians, recommending due pass Dyson, Green, Bundy, Porter, and Kimplin. No recommendation Veazey and Bryce. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. CSSB 164 Hess Amended has no further referral. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered Senate Bill 187, University Tuition Payment Program, recommending due pass Dyson, Bundy, and Veazey. No recommendation Kimplin. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. Senate Bill 187 is on today's calendar. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 189, Finance, Education Loan Repayment Eligibility Occupational License. Recommending due pass Dyson, Green, Bundy, Porter. No recommendation Kimplin, Bryce, and Veazey. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. CSSB 189 then has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on Oil and Gas has considered the qualifications of Robert N. Christensen to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The report was signed by Hodgins Chair, Ogan, Roquebrug, Ryan, Bundy, Bryce, and Kimplin. I have no further special committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation honoring Roy Ewan upon a retirement as President and CEO of ATNA Incorporated by Representative Nicolai and Senator Lincoln. Honoring Juno Douglas High School Concert Band by Representatives Hudson and Elton and Senator Duncan. Honoring Woody Winstrom, Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching by Representative Davies. Honoring Bradford and Barbara Washburn by Senator Wilkin. Honoring Chugiak Mustang Volleyball Team 1997 4A State Champions by Senator Halford and Phillips. Honoring Nick and Marion Lehman, 50th Wedding Anniversary by Senator Torgerson and Lehman and Representatives Phillips and Dyson. Commemorating National Correctional Officers Week, May 4th through the 10th, 1997, by Senator Torgerson. honoring Bonnie Nesbitt, Parent of the Year 1997 Carolyn Richard Memorial Awards by Senator Torgerson, In Memoriam Jim Dugan by Representative Rice, In Memoriam Mary Myers Robinson Frone by Representative Bundy, In Memoriam Kathleen Kathy Hutchinson by Representative Beasy, In Memoriam Tom Keto by Senator Taylor. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction?
There are no bills for introduction.
That brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. We are going to stand in recess for 10 minutes for the purpose of a majority caucus. 10-minute recess. I'll stand briefly at ease while we wait for the majority leader. Madam Clerk, would you please read the first item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 55, amended by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Definition of Certain State Receipts to State Fiscal Procedures to the State Budget to Agency Performance Reports and to Appropriation Bills, eliminating the authority of a department to award a grant to a recipient other than the one named in the appropriation or allocation for the grant and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 55 Finance with the same title, recommending Dupass, Mulder, no recommendation, Terrio, Kelly, and Foster, amend Martin, Coring, and Davies. The report was signed by Terrio Kochar. I have one House Committee Substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the House Finance Committee Substitute for CS for SB 55 Finance amended be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the House Finance Committee Substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Yes, Madam Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Representative Davies to page 4, line 17 through page 5, line 4.
Representative Davies.
Madam Speaker, I move amendment number 1.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Amendment number 1 would delete section 5 of the bill and reenact it in a way that that I believe fits under the title and which accomplishes the original intent of allowing bills to be or programs to be designated in the vast majority of cases, but would allow a safety valve for those cases where it would be inappropriate to award the grants or where a competitive process was strongly preferred. And what this amendment would do would allow that process to happen entirely in the governor's office. It would give authority to the governor to award the grants, and then also authority of the governor to delegate the administration of the grant to a department. Thank you.
Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think I don't quite understand the need to make this change. The current language talks about the department where the grant was steered through awarding the grant and making a determination on the public's interest. That's the type of thing that the departments do all the time. If there's a problematic grant, I think the governor is going to be involved. He's the head of all of the state administration. So I think the language as it's spelled out in the bill is the proper way to go. Thank you.
Further debate on amendment number 1? Ready for the question? Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The problem with the language that's in the bill right now is that if the governor and the department decide that it's inappropriate to offer the grant, then the only option they have is to simply not offer the grant. And, Madam Speaker, the result of that would be that a program that's desirable might then not be funded. And so, Madam Speaker, I think that's the issue before us, is whether we want to contemplate the circumstance that a popular program that we all support would then, because of the particular designee being inappropriate, would then not be available to the public.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
11 yeas, 26 nays.
And so Amendment Number 1 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read the next amendment on her desk?
Amendment Number 2 by Representative Davies, beginning page 4, line 20, following Grant.
Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Amendment Number 2.
There is objection. Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, if we're going to not adopt something like we did in the previous amendment, then I think we place the departments in a awkward position where they determine that the designated grantee may be inappropriate, and where the legislature says, here, we want you to give this money to this person over here, and then we place the administration in the position of saying, well, this person has not carried out the terms of the contract in prior years, or has otherwise behaved inappropriately with public funds, and so now we're going to be in the dilemma then of whether we want to give this money to the person and run the risk of future improprieties, or kill the program. And I think that's a very awkward position to put them in, Madam Speaker. So I think if the legislature wants to choose to put the administration in that position, they ought to indemnify the administration from any expenditures that named by that named recipient, or for activities of the named recipient that are related to the purposes for which the grant was made. And that's what this amendment would do. It just would say that each grant, the legislature is going to essentially override any discretionary power of the administration to in the awarding of these grants. Then the legislature ought to indemnify the administration for any responsibility of the grantee. The legislature is saying, in our wisdom, Madam Speaker, this is the person that is going to do this job, and the administration has absolutely no control over that, then I think we should indemnify them from any responsibility for the consequences of that decision. After all, the decision was the legislators and not the administration's. So that's why I offer this amendment. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would agree with this because I think we find ourselves in a situation where we as legislature say that we had intended for this, this, or that, and therefore we want to force the governor into signing on to the same concept. And when the governor may veto such language, then we condemn him for overriding the legislative prerogative of appropriations. When the governor may say, hey, I got other responsibilities, and I have to make sure that there are, for the public interest, that there is open bidding processes, an open process for which we will have best use of the monies. But if the legislators want to narrowly say, well, we're going to give money to X, Y, and Z, with no questions asked, then fine, they may exert that privilege under the appropriation powers of the Constitution. But I don't see where we have to also say the department and the governor had to ignore the laws pertaining to that type of appropriation.
Representative Terrio?
Madam Speaker, I think the grant still is administered by the department. They still have discretion to make a determination on whether the application by the grantee is up to snuff or not, whether it needs further modification. In fact, what we're doing is we're giving them additional power to say to the grantee, you know, we think you're proposing that to spend money in this area. We don't think that's appropriate. You need to come back to us with a modified proposal on how you're going to administer this grant. So, you know, I think the department, the people in the department still have their discretion to carry out and go ahead with their jobs, make sure that the money is spent properly. I think we actually, we cover right now our state employees when they're doing their job according to the law, and I don't think that the bill, the way it reads right now, does any or proposes anything differently. So I think the amendment is unnecessary.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
13 yeas, 25 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read Amendment Number 3?
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Martin to page 4, line 16.
Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent. Number 3 be passed.
There is objection. Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is almost like a number 2, but it makes it even clearer than if we didn't want a compromise on the current situation, then at least let's just draft this particular section from the bill itself. We had quite a debate in the House Finance if this bill was a section was appropriated or not to put in there, and especially pertaining to the taking it out of the title. And the legal expert said that it was appropriate because of the large title that said pertaining to state budget. So it seems like we can put almost anything in the budget we want in that this new legislation we want. But they said we can't take it out. I asked the Department of Law, and the Department of Law said, yes, we can take it out, Mr. Portello. He said you cannot add to what is limited by a title, but you can take out from underneath a title. If you want to go strictly by a title, then you might as well have unitary legislation. There's no use in having two bodies discuss the same bill. But in case that we do have an open mind on it, I thought it was very important, Madam Speaker, to bring forth to the Chamber's attention a letter by Governor Knowles last year on this specific issue of designated grants to one individual or a company or whatever it may be. And he made it very clear, Madam Speaker, on page 2 here at the bottom of it, pertaining to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation monies, and then also on the top of page 3. And here he also recites the law, grant recipients. But what's more important here is not just general fund monies that we're talking about. In this case here, it is specific federal monies. And the reason he had to veto that language last year, or those designated grants, is that we were circumventing deliberately the named grantees from federal law. We had no right to do that. If we're going to accept the money from the federal government, they always give guidelines. And one of the major guidelines that's set here is that they will have open bid process. That's the only way you can make sure that the public interest is being upheld and that we're getting the best use of our money. These particular named recipients in this case here, last year, and they also, I understand, it's in the capital budget already for these two groups, have been notoriously defiant against Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They absolutely refused to give even RFPs. They said it's our money, the legislators gave it to us, we don't have to give you a request for a proposal or how we're going to spend it. And boy, they're really arrogant. And I just can't believe that one or two individuals can have so much political power that we're going to absolutely change laws. These laws have been in the books for 37 years. And because of two groups that are absolutely in trouble now legally, we're going to change the law so that they can have sole source grants. I would reckon to say, Madam Speaker, that this borders almost on corruption, of misuse of power by certain individuals, because they say they have excessive power of both bodies of the legislature. And I really think that to clear this matter up, if we want to use federal monies, then we must use it properly in the open bid process. This particular Section 5 does not make a distinction between federal monies and general fund monies. It just says grants, period. And we're going to find ourselves into a situation where next year there's going to be more grants than you could ever dream of on the Christmas tree. It'll be loaded with presents. Everyone's going to get their personal grants in there. And we'll be buying turkeys and chickens and everything else to get our favorite grants through. This is too broad of a statement in law that will completely misuse the budget process that we have before us now. And I'm asking people to repeal, pull out Section 5 so that we can have a much longer understanding of what's going on here the only other solution the governor is going to have on a very, very good bill is to veto the bill. And I think the administration in this bill is trying to do a real good effort of bringing forth to the public where we get program receipts and so on. But with this thing in, I would have to vote against a very good bill. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Terrio? Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to associate myself with the remarks of the prior speaker. And also just to point out, Madam Speaker, that the consequence, I believe, of adopting this bill without this amendment, or something like the amendment number one, will be that we will force the governor to essentially strike out a particular program because the named recipient is simply inappropriate. Madam Speaker, in one of these two programs, the named recipient that's now presently in one of our budgets has been indicted by the Attorney General, has been accused of misusing public funds. Madam Speaker, the governor simply cannot give that grant to that person. But, Madam Speaker, that program that person claims to want to carry on for the state government is an extremely popular program. Everybody on both sides of the debate on this issue, everybody agrees that the program is wonderful. And, Madam Speaker, beyond that, there are many people in the state of Alaska who have investments that are enhanced by the operation of that program. And, Madam Speaker, I probably should place a conflict of interest on the record. I'm one of those people. I built an energy-rated house. I got it rated by the energy raters. And, Madam Speaker, the reason why people do that is because they believe that their homes will be enhanced in value, not only for the reduced operational costs that they have during the course of their own ownership in the home, but also in terms of resale value. Madam Speaker, if this program, people who have made investments in this and have upgraded their home for these reasons, if the program goes away, some of the basis for the value of their homes may go away as well. So it's important for the state to maintain this program and to maintain the public confidence in the program. So, Madam Speaker, that's why if we do not adopt this amendment, we will be placing the administration in an extremely awkward position. So, Madam Speaker, I strongly urge that the body adopt this amendment. And also, on a parallel issue, I hope that we take care of the problem of designating grants, especially when it's in violation of as the prior speaker said, of the federal conditions on the monies for which we're using. So it's not good public. It would not be good public policy to do that. It would be, I think, in fact, illegal, and it certainly would be inappropriate to be designated grants to a person that's violated our statutes. So, Madam Speaker, that's why it's important to maintain this. The present statutory language that Section 5 would modify. And just to delete this section, that's in fact, the House Finance Committee took a vote on an earlier bill to do exactly this. We agreed that we're going to do that. Now, the only reason why I believe that we're not doing it now is because of some concern over the title. Because the Senate sent the same thing back to us in another vehicle and handcuffed us. Well, Madam Speaker, I think that's inappropriate. This body has taken in its wisdom to make a decision, and then the other body sends it back to us in a way that we can't change it. I think that violates the basic spirit of a bicameral legislature. And I believe that if we have a title that's broad and there's something under it, we should have the authority to remove something. We can't add something in a bill, but we should be able to take something out. And that's what this amendment proposes to do. It proposes to delete Section 5. And if we were to do that, we would leave the present statute in place. Madam Speaker, that statute has rarely been invoked. It's only been invoked in the case like the ones that we're talking about, where the public interest is clearly not served by the particular designation in that case. So, Madam Speaker, I feel very strongly that we should adopt this, we should leave the present statutes in place, and we should also fix some other appropriations that we're contemplating. Thank you.
I'll stand at ease. House come to order. Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The discussion that we had up in House Finance on this and dealing with the title, we got a memo from our alleged legal that basically said that Article 2, Section 13 of the State Constitution requires, and this is the quote, the subject of each bill shall be expressed in the title. And it said, clearly if the title mentions something that is not contained in the bill, the title does not literally comply with this provision, and there's substantial risk that the court will find a violation of the Constitution. And later he says, my guess is that the more specific the description of the missing term is in the title, the more likely the court will find it misleading and unconstitutional. And the language that's in the title says, eliminating the authority of a department to award a grant to a recipient other than the one named in the appropriation or allocation. That's pretty specific. I mean, that's, I don't know how you read that any other way than what the words actually say. So that's why we came up with this language that sort of strikes the middle ground, that it does remove the governor's authority to withhold that grant and give it to somebody else, but it does allow him to withhold giving it in within 60 days, negotiate with the named recipient, and if they can't come to an agreement on that alleviates the governor's concern of whether it's in the public's interest or not, then he can just hold on to it. Now, there was some discussion that the decision from legal was inconsistent with earlier decisions, and I told the members that I would get in touch with the head of our legal department and ask about that. And they did send me a copy of a 1990 decision that talks about the titles. The titles can be broader, and different court cases have gone different ways. But the summary, it says, to summarize, the general rule is that the act will be valid despite the fact that the title list material is not included in the body unless the title is misleading or deceptive. Again, it sort of gets to the issue of how specific was the wording in the title. And I think the wording in this title is fairly specific. And if we drop the section out, then we put a constitutional cloud over the entire piece of legislation. With regard to the actual impact of the language as it's proposed, I think what it does is that it I don't think it's going to lead to, you know, a deluge of grant recipients who want to be written right into the budget. I think what it really does is it sort of empowers the governor as we go through the budget process. If he sees a grant to a named recipient that he disagrees with, he can come to us and say, you know, if you go ahead with that, I don't think that's in the public's best interest for A, B, C, and D reason. And if you go ahead with it, I am going to either be forced into negotiating with them to make sure that they jump through the proper hoops, or I'm going to have to withhold the money. And so you, legislature, you factor that into your decision process. Whether you think that it would be appropriate to go ahead with the grant to the named recipient. So I think, you know, if there's suspicion of abuse on either side, you know, we've heard that, well, the current statute is rarely invoked. I think the statute as we're proposing it is going to be rarely invoked. I think it sets the balance of power a little bit differently than where it is in statutes, but it's not, to me, a slam dunk for either side. We're going to have to work together. Otherwise, the determination will be made that it's not in the public interest and the money will be held. Now, if there's an allegation that the current money is being misspent or it's a misuse of federal funds that will potentially jeopardize our ability to receive and expend those federal funds in the future, I think that triggers that it's probably not in the public's best interest. And the administration should come down and tell us that they think that's so right now, and if we don't follow through, then this gives them the power to follow through and withhold that money because they don't want to jeopardize our ability to capture those funds in the future. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Some things don't mind being thrown into the briar patch, and others do. And when we had this up in finance, it was very clear that no one particularly liked Section 5 of the bill. And I believe that the ledge legal was not correct in their interpretation of what they saw was the way it should go. And there are probably ways that we could get around that by simply repealing Section 5 and then reenacting it later on in the bill if we like. But I just don't think that that should really be the question for this body here, the fact that we must include it because it's mentioned in the title. And it was the desire, basically, of quite a few members of the Finance Committee that it be taken out. But then because of the legal opinion that was given, which I strongly disagree with to the point where I'm going to have to apologize to the person that came up with that opinion, the compromise ended up saying, well, we'll do it this way. We'll let the departments not make the award. Well, that put us into kind of a catch-22 situation. What happens here now by the compromising? What happens if there is a particular function or service that we want carried out, but it's very obvious that the person that gets the grant or the vendor is unable to do so, but we want these projects? There is no escape valve there. Under the present law, there is. In other words, if we accept the amendment proposed by the representative in front of me, the old escape valve is there, and it can be negotiated, or we can go out and rebid it and provide that service. And it's a rare incident where this occurs, as mentioned here before. But if we're going to hang our hat on the fact that we have to compromise on an issue that we disagree with, because it's mentioned in the title, that is not a compromise. There are some things that you needn't compromise if you disagree with it. And I feel that the representative ahead of me also indicated that he talked to the Attorney General. And from my experience in dealing with these things, it's not necessary to include everything that is in the title in the piece of legislation. You can simply make reference to it if you like. But it's very obvious there's parameters in there for the process between the House and the other body so that you know what you're working with and you can't add anything, but you can certainly do all the damage you want within those parameters. And I think we've seen a lot of pieces of legislation where we've done that. So, Madam Speaker, I would encourage everyone to support Amendment Number 3. I don't think we're treading on any serious legal questions as the decision of this body. I recommend we do.
Further debate on Amendment Number 3? Representative Martin, in wrap-up?
Yes, Madam Speaker, thank you. As wrap-up, when we had this issue on the House Finance floor, I did bring up this issue with a member from the legal staff who was there. I don't know what particular reason he was there. I think he was one of the ones that was involved in the bill itself. And I asked him what was the standing, what was the normal procedure, and he made it very clear, and that's the first time it brought up to our finance committee, that from his experience, and he's been there, I think, 24 years now on our legal staff, saying that we can take sections out of a bill that came from the other House, but we cannot add into it. It was only because that we were winning that upper hand, I think, that the co-chair decided to get another opinion from legal staff. And of course, we got the opinion that I guess they wanted or other people wanted. It certainly defies, in my mind, as the gentleman from Fairbanks mentioned, the two House prerogatives. If we're overruled here by the Senate because of a title, I think that next year we may be in serious trouble, both bodies, by limiting titles to bills that are so bad that it just makes the other House useless. And in this case here, this might set a precedent to that. In this particular case, getting back to the issue, it just seems to me that under the guise of a title, and the title is not part of the law. It has nothing. It's just to give you and me a quick reference of what this bill entails. So under the title, we are going to make substantial changes in the way both houses operate and substantial changes in the bill itself, in the way we designate grants. Only under a title. It has nothing to do with law. We're going to use that as the excuse, as the barrier, where we cannot address the normal debate that goes on between two bodies about an issue. And Chad, I just can't believe in this particular case. We had this issue last year. The governor did the proper thing, as you see in front of you. pertaining to these designated grants, because they are federal monies that we were talking about, same monies I think are available now. And then most importantly, and I'll bring it out, because the individual felt that it should be brought out, about the use of pull tab monies.
Representative Martin?
Yes, ma'am.
I have hesitated to call on you on your debate because every member that spoke on this amendment went off the subject of the amendment and discussed the whole issue of the title.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to pull tab monies, that's way too far off the title. Representative Martin, keep your comments on the amendment, please.
Okay, on the amendment.
Representative Martin, your wrap-up on the amendment.
Yes, sir. On the amendment, Madam Speaker, we want to prove that under the designated grants provision that would be wide open here, we want to prove that these will be influenced by the public interest. And no one member of our society, no one group, will have complete control of the legislature in making us designate grants. Thank you.
And again, for the information of the body, everyone that debated on this amendment strayed off the amendment. Please, in future debates on amendments, keep your discussion on the amendments on the amendment themselves. Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 3? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
15 yeas, 18 nays.
And so amendment number 3 fails to pass. Representative Elton?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May we go up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Madam Speaker, in the gallery behind me is a senior government class from Juneau Douglas High School, constituents of both mine and the Juneau representative who represents the Valley, Juneau's Valley. And it's a class of 34 students, Madam Speaker. I think in the other gallery, the Piratrovich Gallery, is the teacher. I think that indicates an amazing amount of faith in the decorum of the class, that he's sitting in the gallery in which he fits and the class fits in the other gallery. If the body could help me welcome them, please.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that HCS for CS for SB 55 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
House CS for CS for Senate Bill 55 Finance by the House Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to the Definition of Certain State Receipts to State Fiscal Procedures to the State Budget to Agency Performance Reports and to Appropriation Bills, eliminating the authority of a department to award a grant to a recipient other than the one named in the appropriation or allocation for the grant and providing for an effective date.
Debate? Are you ready for the question? Mr. Minority Leader?
We've had a lot of debate on Section 5. I'm just curious if... realize it's a governor's bill, but obviously it's changed something, the governor's bill. I'm wondering how important this bill is, to be honest with you, on the other sections, and somebody that thinks it's important might tell me why.
Representative Terrio?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The majority of the bill is language that we've already passed. It's passed both bodies and been sent up to the governor. The new sections are Section 4 and Section 5. We've discussed Section 5 at length. Section 4 deals with definitions of program receipts and designated program receipts. And you can see on page 4, lines 9 through 13, we're now going to be counting as other interest generated off of the Children's Trust, commercials, fisheries test, fishing operations will be counted as other, their self-funding. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission, by law, is self-funding, covers all their expense. And we are now going to make it clear that if someone out in the private sector, through a contractual arrangement, enters into an agreement with a state agency to perform some function, and the receipt of the money is tied directly to following through on that contract, that now will be counted as other. This does not allow anything to happen that can't happen under current law. It's an accounting mechanism in the way the funds are accounted for in our budget process. We will still have complete control over these funds through the budgeting process, whether they're counted as other funds, general fund program receipts. We still have to authorize that money coming under state control and then authorize the expenditure of such funds. So that's Section 4, and as I've said, we've discussed Section 5. And, Madam Speaker, just very quickly, since a question was brought up regarding my request for a legal determination, I requested that legal determination when I saw that there was possibly a title constraints for the bill. When the original bill went through the House, there was an amendment to pull it out, and I voted against that amendment. And it was a close call for me. When the second bill came, I changed my mind. I wanted to move ahead with modification to the language, but I thought there was a legitimate title constraint. So I got the opinion. I think it's backed up somewhat by old opinions. And I came up with language that I think got us to where we wanted to go, but didn't cause a title problem. And that was the reason that I requested the legal determination. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I support the bill that's put before this body. One of the things that does kind of bother me here is that we were driven by a legislative legal opinion, but at least the way this piece of legislation is written, if the department feels that there is an accountability by the person that was given the grant, they then can deny giving that grant to that individual or group of people. But the shortcoming here, however, is what happens if there is a service that we want to carry forth. We're now restricted by the wording of this. And when the legislative body appropriates or gives grants to individuals, it is always the executive body that has to execute those grants and determine whether or not the designee does indeed qualify and have certain service requirements or performance requirements that must be performed before the money is released. And we're just in that quandary now. What happens if an agency decides not to grant? So the way the bill is written, we certainly have fiscal accountability, the fact that the money then is not expended. But then from there, we have no place to go to seek other individuals or other bid awards to a service that, we would like to have provided. Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise in strong opposition to the bill as it presently is written. The only two sections, as was indicated, that are operative are 4 and 5, is essentially. Section 4, we can do right now. We don't need it. The legislature has the authority to designate funds, other funds, or general fund program receipts. We can do that right now. The only advantage of having that is that we have some general agreement as to how we're going to do that as we move forward. But if the legislature were to adopt this statute and then do something in violation, that no court would find us in violation because they would just say, well, that's what we decided to do, so that we must have changed our rules. So, Madam Speaker, we don't need this. It would be nice to have Section 4, but we absolutely don't need it to accomplish the purposes that are being sought in there. But Section 5, Madam Speaker, is very problematic. And Section 5 of the bill, I believe we shouldn't adopt. So therefore, Madam Speaker, if we were to defeat this bill, the status quo in the statutes would be maintained. Basically, we could do the appropriations wherever we wanted to, and the safety valve for maintaining a program in place in a situation where the legislature designated a grant, but the grantee was inappropriate to receive it, could be maintained. So, Madam Speaker, I think that the Section 5 does great harm. The fix that's in there is a nice compromise. I think it's a good idea. If we couldn't do anything else, but Madam Speaker, we can do something else. We can defeat this bill and leave the status quo. Madam Speaker, that's my strong recommendation to the body, is that we defeat this bill, leave the status quo, and then let's come back at it again and try to deal with these issues separately the way we should. I think to tie our hands on these two really quite separate issues, Madam Speaker, is essentially a violation of the single subject rule also. So, Madam Speaker, to be forced to vote on one of these issues because of the other one is wholly inappropriate, in my opinion. And if it's not unconstitutional, it's certainly bad policy. And so for those reasons, Madam Speaker, I urge the members to vote no on this bill. We'll maintain the status quo, then we come back and do it right the next time. Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wholeheartedly agree that we should vote against the bill, even though I like the effort and the work that the OMB and the administration had been doing to try to help the public in more detailed ways to understand the budget, to understand how monies are appropriated, where monies come from, program receipts and so on, general fund. This is a good faith effort in trying to do what is termed by the governor of the patch for truth in budgeting. However, this last Section 5 completely destroys the basic fundamentals of separation of powers. And in this case here, we are literally telling the executive branch, you will give the money to X, you will give the money to A, you will give the money to YZ. And you better come up with very good excuses where you think it's not in the public interest. We literally tie their hands from not acting in unison with the legislature's appropriation, in unison to saying that the money we do appropriate will be spent and done in the best interest of the public. You will have open bidding. You will make sure that the job is done for what the money was given for. As it is now, the designated grants in this bill just says give the money to Y, give the money to Z, and we don't care what they do with it. And I think that's completely inappropriate for this legislature or any legislature to give money under those kind of conditions. So for those reasons, and also this doesn't address the concern we have with federal monies. How can we, by state law, and let the federal government say, well, if that's the way that Alaska wants to treat our monies and grants, then fine, no use in giving them any money because they're not going to obey the process, the guidelines we have for RFP, for making sure we get our use of the money that we appropriate. Alaska ruled against that. So in this way here, we may find ourselves in a position at Seattle office calling up real quick to the governor, we're not going to give you any more grants until we're sure that the monies will be used and open bidding process in this particular case. So it's a shame a good bill has to be flawed and tarnished by this particular section, and I ask that we defeat the bill right now, and maybe we can talk to whoever necessary to be a little more reasonable in deleting Section 5. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Just to demonstrate that I am a deliberative person in a deliberative body, I'll recant my commitment to the bill that's before us, because what was said by the gentleman from Fairbanks and the gentleman in front of me are absolutely correct. I guess I got tied in with other details of the bill, and I concur with the last two speakers on this, and the process does work.
You ready for the question? Mr. Minority Leader?
Just one point. I'm torn on this bill also, to be honest with you now. I'm not sure, but I think I will vote for the bill, Madam Speaker. I think there is one other step, and we can have the guy on the third floor decide if it's bad enough that the things are in it that he wants to keep or not and deal with it. So I'll vote yes.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 55? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
24 yeas, 13 nays.
And so, committee substitute for Senate Bill 55 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
You, Madam Speaker, move the effective date.
Motion before the body is the adoption of Representative Bundy. Motion before the body is the adoption of the effective date clause. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please open the roll. Clerk, please tally the board.
34 yeas, 3 nays.
And so the effective date clause is adopted. I have very good news for the members of the body. Just got word from Senator Stevens' office that he won an RS-2477 issue on the Senate floor today with a vote of 51 to 49. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Bill 68, financed by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Task Force on Privatization and Providing for an Effective Date. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 68, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending do pass James, Hodgins, Dyson, Beasy, and Ivan. Do not pass Elton. No recommendation Berkowitz. The report was signed by James Chair. The Finance Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 68, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending do pass Terrio, Mulder, Martin, Coring, Davies, Kelly. No recommendation Foster. The report was signed by Terrio. Co-chair, I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for CS for SB 68 Finance be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the State Affairs Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Amendment number 1 by Representative Elton to page 2, line 12, after Senate.
Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 1.
There is objection. Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, the purpose of the amendment is relatively simple. It maintains the membership of the task force at the number 13. What it does do is it raises the number of public employee nominees that serve on the task force from 2 to 4. As currently structured, 2 of the 3 public members appointed by the governor will be selected from a list of nominees by state employee unions. This amendment provides that of the 2 public members appointed by the Senate president, 1 would be from a list of nominees submitted by state employee unions. And, Madam Speaker, the other public employee would be nominated by you as one of your 2 nominees, or one of your 2 selections of public members to the task force, and you would select one of your public nominees from a list submitted by the state employee unions. Madam Speaker, I don't think it's asking too much to have 4 public employees on this 13-member task force. I think they bring an awful lot to the table. They recognize how government services are provided. I think that they want to be a part of the solution as much as anybody, and I would encourage members to please vote yes.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, there is nothing, I rise in opposition to the amendment, because there is nothing in the appointing powers of the presiding officer of the other body and the presiding officer of this body that would preclude them from appointing a member of the labor organization. But they could also appoint a state employee that was not a member of a labor organization, if they so choose, without this amendment. But with this amendment, it is mandating the appointments of both the presiding officers in both bodies, where they only have 2 appointments. And out of those 2, it says that they must represent labor organizations. Well, there are a lot of state employees that are not members of labor organizations, and I support labor organizations. But I believe this amendment is ill-conceived and that it limits the appointing powers of both of the members, both presiding officers of the legislative branch of government.
Further debate on amendment number 1? Ready for the question? Representative Martin.
Madam Speaker, thank you. We had this amendment in Finance Committee and voted it down for a very logical reason. This would give you an even number on the board rather than an odd number, and we know in basic Robert's Rules of Order and parliamentary procedures, they always recommend an odd number body in any commission or group working. That way you can make a final decision instead of being split continuously.
I'll stand briefly at ease, Representative Martin. I did hear a comment from somebody in the room that we may have to reduce our numbers by 1 in order
right.
to
have an withdraw number. My odd comment number. By an odd member.
We will let you withdraw your odd comment, Representative Martin. Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative James? Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
11 yeas, 22 nays.
And so Amendment Number 1 fails to pass. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
Amendment Number 2 is being duplicated. I could read it.
Please do.
Amendment Number 2 by Representative Davies to page 1, lines 5 and 6, delete all material.
Amendment Number 2 is the deletion of Section 1, Paragraph 1 on page 1, deleting lines 5 and 6. Is there objection? There is objection. Representative Davies?
Here, I'll move Amendment Number 2.
There is objection. Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think it is being distributed, but just, again, what I want to delete is the finding in here that where we're finding that the annual cost of state government is exceeding the annual revenue of the state. Well, Madam Speaker, that's in the present, is exceeding. And Madam Speaker, it simply isn't true. We had a surplus this year. And Madam Speaker, secondly, we have amounts of money in the earnings reserve of the permanent fund that in many years would cover the shortfall. So, Madam Speaker, it's sort of like this. The state of Alaska is kind of like a person who puts a whole bunch of money in a savings account and then tells his creditors they don't have enough money to pay the bills. Madam Speaker, we have the money to pay for our expenditures. And especially if we continue to reduce the budget as we are, we clearly have. So I don't believe that this finding is necessarily true. So, Madam Speaker, I would say that, you know, if we want to talk about privatization, whether, you know, the private sector is more efficient, things like that, I think that's a fair game, and we ought to talk about that bill. But this is essentially a red herring in that discussion, I believe, Madam Speaker, and don't find it to be true. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The statement is absolutely true. It says the expenditures are more than the revenues. It doesn't mention savings accounts. Yes, we certainly could spend savings. We could spend the corpus of the permanent fund, I guess, based on the previous speaker's idea that that's the way that these things should work. That isn't what the statement says. It is absolutely true. And if he's got an idea about a savings account, he should make an amendment to that effect.
Madam Speaker, I rise on a point of personal privilege almost. I do not want to be misquoted on that issue. That's a very sensitive issue in the state of Alaska. I did not suggest spending the corpus of the permanent fund. I do not wish to be misquoted on that. So, Madam Speaker, having gotten that straight, let me talk about what I'm talking about, revenue. The earnings, the undistributed earnings, the unobligated earnings of the permanent fund are available for appropriation by this legislature. They are revenues to the state and could be counted.
Further debate on Amendment Number 1. Ready for the question? Question being, Amendment Number 2, I'm sorry. Shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
9 yeas, 25 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 fails to pass. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 68, State Affairs, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
House CS for CS for Senate Bill 68, State Affairs, by the House State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Task Force on Privatization and Providing for an Effective Date.
Debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 68? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
30 yeas, 6 nays.
And so, committee substitute for Senate Bill 68 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Effective date?
Yes, I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on the passage of HCS for CS for SB 68. State Affairs be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 88, Labor and Commerce. By the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled an act relating to the Board of Public Accountancy, extending the termination date of the Board of Public Accountancy and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommending do pass. Caldery, Sanders, Hudson, Roeckberg. No recommendation, Bryce. The report was signed by Roeckberg, Chair. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that CS for SB 88, Labor and Commerce, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
CS for Senate Bill 88, Labor and Commerce, entitled an act relating to the Board of Public Accountancy, extending the termination date of the Board of Public Accountancy and providing for an effective date.
Debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Davies?
Person carrying the bill, just give a brief summary.
Representative Roeckberg?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill was heard in its prior House companion bill, is House Bill 140. The bill simply extends the sunset date to the year 2001. It modifies the grounds for reappointment to the board. It clarifies certain aspects of the licensing procedure here for accountancies by removing the distinction between permitting and certificate. And it repeals the existence of a temporary certificate which was in statute and is never used by the board. Madam Speaker, I ask for everybody's yes vote on this measure.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 88? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
36 yeas, 1 nay.
And so Senate Bill 88 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on CS for SB 88, Labor and Commerce, be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill 100 by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee by request, entitled an act relating to grant authority for services for developmentally delayed or disabled children and their families. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommending do pass. Dyson, Bundy, and Bryce. No recommendation, Veazey and Kimplin. The report was signed by Bundy, Chair. The Finance Committee referral was waived. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that SB 100 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
Senate Bill 100, an act relating to grant authority for services for developmentally delayed or disabled children and their families.
Debate. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. SB 100 will allow the Department of Health and Social Services to award grants under the Infant Learning Program. The Infant Learning Program grants provide home-based therapy and education for children from age birth through 2 years who have moderate to severe both mental and physical handicaps and or the capacity for development in this period of time in a child's life is critically important. And the Department of Health and Social Services have provided these grants for services to the developmentally disabled and delayed infants since fiscal year 1977. The Department of Law recently determined that DHSS does not have explicit authority to do this. Passage of this legislation would provide the authority and allow DHSS to continue the grant program that it's operated in the past. The Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education strongly supports the passage of this bill.
Further debate? Representative Ogun.
Madam Speaker, I rise in support of the bill. I think this fits very well into my philosophy of we need to expend our health and social services monies on people who can help themselves, not people that won't help themselves. Thank you.
Further debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Senate Bill 100? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so Senate Bill 100 passes the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 134, Hess, by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Homeschooling for Elementary and Secondary Students. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommending do pass. Dyson and Veazey, no recommendation. Bundy and Kimplin. The report was signed by Bundy, Chair. I have an amendment on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Clerk, please read the first amendment.
Amendment number one by Representative Croft to page 1, line 12, following being.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number one.
There is objection. Representative Croft.
And, Madam Speaker, I'd like to clarify, it's to page 1, line 4. It's the confusing part was it's section 12 there that it's putting into the statute. That was my fault, not the clerk's, but it should be line 4, and the section number it's adding is 12. That made it a little confusing. This is a simple bill and a simple amendment. The bill, if I can just very briefly, says that clarifies in the law that somebody who's being homeschooled is not in violation of the compulsory education laws.
Representative Croft, please keep your comments to the amendment, which is one word.
Right. And that's where, that's the all the background I needed.
Right was enough.
All the background I needed to say this simply says adequately, and it simply clarifies that somebody who's being homeschooled, that it truly is being done. Under this, it would seem to me, a child being educated in the child's home, that we have no sideboards on it, no protection that's actually going on. I'm worried that a mere allegation of homeschooling, even if they're not doing it. I know that the vast majority of people who homeschool will be doing it correctly. I don't want to and adequately educating their children. I have neighbors who do it, and they do it very well. I think that most of the people affected by this amendment will not be affected by this amendment. Most of the people homeschooling will not be affected. But that this provides some protection. We see in the other areas that this section amends a lot of sideboards, a lot of to certain requirements. We recently passed testing in the public schools. And yet in this area, we have no provision that says this be done with any minimum level. And I've talked to some of the members about it before. There was some observation that maybe this would be covered, this concern would be covered, under the child in need of aid. That is, if you had a child who was at home being given no education under just a bare statement of homeschooling, that you could somehow say, well, they're being neglected. I'd just like to note that the definition of child abuse and neglect requires an observable and substantial impairment in the child's ability to function. So it would be very, very difficult to say to someone who was just putting their kid in front of the TV and saying that was homeschooling, that you have a substantial burden to show a substantial impairment in the child's ability to function. By the time you've shown that, the child's ability to function has already been impaired. And so I don't want a lot of interference in this area. I don't want anything but that we adequately do what we promise to do, that we provide that if they're being adequately educated in the home, we don't need to require them to go to public school. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise in objection to the amendment. I think the concern raised by the distinguished representative to my left are valid. We have no evidence that there is any problem with the homeschoolers needing to be more closely supervised by the state. They all, that I know of, go on and take the state GED, or hopefully we'll take our other proficiency tests in the future. I don't want to authorize the state to be judging the adequacy of the parents in home. in what they're doing to homeschool. This state has shown a very enlightened view of supporting a lot of educational alternatives. We've had extensive hearings on this bill. The administration and Dr. Nancy Buell, the Director of Teaching and Learning, the Department of Education, wholeheartedly have supported the bill in its present state. I, for one, pledge to watch and see if there are any abuses of the nature that are being noted by the sponsor of the amendment. I would encourage that we pass the bill as it stands and reject this amendment.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I know the intentions of the maker of this amendment are honorable. I have a question. Perhaps I want to know who makes a determination of what is adequate. Is it the local school district? And I ask those questions because most people who are homeschooling are not dissatisfied with what was offered on the public platter. And most of the agencies' solution to most problems is to get with the government program and your life will be better and everything will be wonderful. And those folks who choose not to get on this bandwagon, I don't want them supervised by the people from whom they're trying to get away. So I'd like to answer questions, if I may, please.
Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm curious myself about an issue with this is talking about adequacy in this amendment. And what is adequate? Is there not a requirement when you go to homeschool that you have to have some kind of a program and the parents have to pick that program and they just inform the Board of Education? I'm not sure how this works, but if that be the case, is that in itself prove adequacy?
Representative Dyson?
Yeah, to the minority leader, or through the chair of the speaker, to the minority leader. The many homeschoolers are using the state ALESCA correspondence program, and indeed that's closely monitored and so on. The others are using other programs that are available, and the state has been, with, as I said before, a really enlightened attitude, has been allowing, I won't say subterfuges, but the parents to declare themselves as a private school in order to, for the Department of Education to be able to say that they are involved in a school and meeting the compulsory requirements and that it is being monitored. At ease for a moment. Thank you. But there is, to my knowledge, with the homeschoolers, the school state does not have a strict standard for monitoring how the students are doing. As the maker of the amendment suggested, the performance of the homeschool community has been so good that the Department of Education has not recommended that any monitoring is needed. My understanding is virtually all the homeschool families send their kids to get the state GED as a one way of documenting that they have completed an effective education program, albeit a slightly more informal one. So I think the answer to the minority leader's question is no.
Representative Croft?
Yeah, I'd forgotten the question, but I think anyone that is using the ALESCA program or is using any other national state program would be adequate under this. And most others that were devised on their own. I mean, I'm simply trying to put some requirement that it be adequate. ALESCA would be and other national programs would be. My six-year-old friend next door, David Schwartz, is homeschooled, loves it, and there's always a time when he and I can't play anymore because he's going to study. I have no idea whether they're doing that through the state or another national program, or on their own. I know it has a deep religious base to it, and that's entirely appropriate. I'm sure, from what I know about his course, it would be adequate. I'm simply worried about inadequate homeschooling, particularly homeschooling done that where we have a lot of worry that it's not really schooling at all, but simply avoiding the public school compulsory education program.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I concur in the assessment that the vast majority of homeschoolers are very dedicated to children's education, that they get a very good education. But, Madam Speaker, I am aware of circumstances in our district where a student violates the truancy rules, doesn't show up often enough, and requests to be transferred to another school, transfers to the other school, doesn't show up there, and then the parents are admonished that the child has to show up a number of days, and they don't do that, and then the parent simply takes that child home and says, well, I'm homeschooling. And, Madam Speaker, there are abuses of that that I am personally aware of, and clearly in those cases, there are often cases where the parent is impaired in one way or another, the child is not being adequately educated. They're not being educated at all. They're just being warehoused at home instead of going to school. And in fact, oftentimes they're not even at home. They're roaming the streets. Now, I guess one could say that under this that they're just simply not being educated. But I think we get into if we were to go to the ultimate extreme with those circumstances, there might be some argument, that the parent could raise that all it says is that I have to educate them. It doesn't say I have to, they have to learn anything in particular. I just have to educate them. And so maybe they're, this street of hard knocks is an adequate education for some of those folks. But, Madam Speaker, I don't think that we would believe that. So, Madam Speaker, I think that there are situations where there is some abuse, and I think adding this this word in here certainly would do no harm to the legitimate homeschool community at all. And it would help in some circumstances, I think, where parents are very neglectful and are, in fact, just trying to avoid the truancy rules. Thank you.
Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, I guess I have a little bit of a different twist on this issue, and I understand all of the concerns that were listed by all of the speakers before me. I guess that, to me, when it says being educated in the child's home is happy, I'm happy with that. What I'm not happy with adding in is any kind of a description of what that education should be, because who makes that decision, and what kinds of requirements are we going to have for the school district, as an example, who recognizes these children are not in a public school, that they're going to have to do to satisfy this need that's in statute. I think that it is opening up an area that we don't want to open up, and even though I would certainly be a supporter for all children at home to be educated adequately, and the example that was given to us by the speaker just before me of the student who moved from school to school and still doesn't attend, I don't know that he's being educated. He or she would be being educated if there is no training at home at all, so I think it would be covered under the existing statute. And so I just don't want to add in that caveat that would require someone to come along and choose a definition of adequate, which wouldn't necessarily mean the same as it would to me, and so I would recommend that we vote no on this amendment.
You ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
13 yeas, 23 nays.
And so amendment number 1 fails to pass. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Yes. I think the bill is in front of us.